We are holding on tests on the bay's four lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of discussing the question, what bracha do you make on cooked vegetables? Shlokos, as we want to call them. So we had two different opinions on it. Well, nowadays, I don't think anybody calls it that. I don't think if you go into a restaurant and ask for shlokos, they'll know what you're talking about. But in halacha, that's what they're called. So we had two opinions. One is hadama, one that's shakol. We said, according to the chist, there's no real machlokos. It depends whether we're talking about a vegetable that's better raw than cooked. Then when it's cooked, it's hadama, versus where it's better cooked than raw, then you say hadama on it after it's cooked. Where it's better raw and not so good cooked, for example, onions, then you would say shakol on it after it's cooked. And when it's good either way, then you would say hadama on it. Then we said that according to the Nachman, not necessarily so, it may actually be a machlokes. And we talked about that the more accurate version seems to be that hadama. With most kinds of vegetables, there will be hadama. There's only a minority of vegetables. The Gemara gave, as the example, onions and garlic as the examples, where they become worse by cooking, and you would say shakol on them after they're cooked. Most other vegetables are at least as good cooked as raw, and are at least as commonly eaten cooked as raw, and some of them even are not really edible raw at all, only edible cooked. Potatoes, for example. So Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel says, I have a contradiction from a braisa. The braisa talks about Pesach. Yirokas sha'adam yoytze behen yirei chevos about Pesach. The vegetables that a person is yoytze the mitzvah of Moru with on Pesach. Yoytze behen of a kelach shalahen. You can be yoytze whether you eat the leaves or whether you eat the stalk. Avaloik bushin, but not if they're pickled. Avaloik shlukin. Not if they're shlukin and muvashalin. No, what exactly the difference between shlukin and muvashalin is in various places, Rashi and Tosfos discuss, is it that shlukin is more cooked than muvashalin? So muvashalin would be cooked a little bit, and shlukin would be cooked a lot, or various other possible distinctions about that. Anyway, the point is, if you're going to tell me that cooked vegetables retain their bracha of hadamah, Am I low? Then why shouldn't you be yotze with cooked mara? So wouldn't that show that cooked mara, in fact, that the cooked vegetables, in fact, change their bracha? The answer is low. Not necessarily. Shiny husband would be in a town mara of Alexa. No, because in that case, you need to have the taste of mara. And once it's cooked, it doesn't have the same taste anymore. So you don't have it. But when it comes to the bracha, it can still be considered the same pre as it was before. Mm-hmm. So no proof in that. Okay, now, in the course of the discussion about shlokos, we mentioned, one of the last things we mentioned was that we had the example where Rabbi Yochanan ate a salted, pickled olive and said a bracha on it at the beginning at the end, which we said that evidently what it must be is he must have said Baruch Priya 8 at the beginning and bracha Hasman Shalosh at the end, meaning that even though it was pickled, which in halacha is considered the equivalent of cooking it, it still kept its original bracha of 8, not like the version that we would have said that it would be downgraded to shekel. But now we have a side question on that. I'm going to review me a little bit. Rabbi Yochanan Heichi Bavaruch al Zayis Maliach. How anyway is Rabbi Yochanan making a bracha achrona on a salted, pickled olive? If it was, the implication of being it was one individual olive, and we know that you only make a bracha achrona for a kezayis or more food. Well, a kezayis is the size of an olive, including the pit. Given the shtira lagarine, well, the question is, because you take out the pit, you don't need the pit of the olive. So once you take out the pit, then you have less than a kezayis.
But naturally, it's with the pit.
The point remains: the definition of kezayis is the volume of that you ate an amount of food equal to the volume of a zayis of an olive, including its pit. So let's say, for example, nowadays we usually consider, according to Rav Avraham Chaim, at least that a kezayis is an ounce. So the question is like this, in other words, so the definition of kezayis is 1 ounce. That means that that an olive is going to be 1 ounce in size. Well, once you take out the pit, it's less than an ounce. Rabbi Yochanan obviously is not eating the pit. All the pits are not edible. So that means he ate less than an ounce. So how is he making a bracha right now? Right? It doesn't matter. No, because you don't make a bracha on something that you put in your mouth. You only make a bracha on something. In fact, you have it only on something that you swallow. In fact, you have a concept. I believe we learned it earlier in the Masechta, or if not, then we learned it in Nida, that about mat emes, where somebody is just tasting a dish to see whether it has enough salt or flavoring or what have you. You don't necessarily say bracha, and you don't necessarily say bracha on that unless you actually swallow it. But just putting it in your mouth, which, by the way, it's worth pointing out, if it ever points out in that connection, therefore, that when a person makes a bracha on food and puts it in their mouth, they shouldn't, a lot of times, the person will let's say, will make hamotzi, take a bite of the bread, and then before they even swallow it, they'll start talking. The Alter Rebbe says you're not supposed to do that, because you're not making the bracha on the putting it in your mouth and chewing, you're making a bracha on the swallowing. So therefore, we're going to talk later on about hefsek between the bracha and the eating, but if you do that, then it comes out. You have a hefsek between the bracha and the eating, and that's no good. So, okay. Anyway, the point is that that's the question. So it was less than a kazayis by definition on the face of it. So how is he making a bracha achrayna? Tosfos, by the way, points out over here in this connection, first of all, that's only as far as an after bracha. A before bracha, you say even if you're eating only a tiny amount, because we learned at the beginning of the parent, what's the source for making a bracha beforehand? Also, you're not allowed to have hanah from this world without a bracha, so it doesn't matter the amount that you're eating. Also, Tosfos brings up a point that maybe this whole concept of needing a kezayis is only for the more important brachas, such as benching or brachas men shalosh. Maybe for burn the koshes, you might even say it for less than a kezayis. And because for alamicha or brachas men shalosh or benching or whatever, you need a significant amount of food, namely a kezayis, but not necessarily for burn the koshes. Then Tosfos mentions another point, which is the Yerushalmi answers over here, that in general, the Yerushalmi says over here in this connection, that in general, if a person eats one individual item, which is a beria, in its original form, in its original state, for example, one grape or one piece of pomegranate, then they would already make a bracha achrayna, even if it's less than a kezayis. So Tosfos discusses, does that agree with our Gemara? Does that disagree with our Gemara? What's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch, though, is because of that suffix, so that in general, we go like a Bavli against the Yerushalmi, but on the other hand, not necessarily that a Bavli and Yerushalmi arguing over here. So it's brought in Poskim, it's brought in Aruch Chaim, in Hilchos Brachos, that a person should be careful not to do that. Don't eat one beria, for example, one grape or one berry or one olive or what have you, because then you have a suffix about the bracha achrayna. Eat enough that you should eat enough that either break it up, and then it's not a barrier, or eat more of it, and that way you'll have enough for a bracha achrayna definitely. Yeah. Okay, anyway, getting back to our Gemara over here, that if the olive is missing its pit, then you don't have a kezayis. Amalei, so Rabzeira answers, we sabbath kezayis gadol ba'inan. Do you think when we say kezayis, we mean the size largest possible olive? Kezayis ba'inani ba'inan. We need only the size of a medium-sized zayis, v'ha'ikah. The olive that they brought to Rabbi Yechanan was a big olive, an extra large olive. So even if once they took out the pit, you still had a kezayis left of olive flesh.
I mean, a very big one.
It didn't have to be that big. It just had to be a little bit bigger. Yeah. The Tanan, as in fact, we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim. You have a half parak in Kalim over there that deals with the shiurim, when we say what is the shiur of a kezayis, what is the shiur of a kabeta, etc. So the zayis shomer, so the Mishnah says, the zayis that we're talking about over there, loik katan v'loik gadol, we're not talking about an extra large olive, we're not talking about an extra small olive, ela benini, we're talking about a medium-sized olive, v'zehu iguri. This is the iguri olive. It's a type of olive, as we're going to see in a second why it's called that. But Amar Ababahu, loy iguri shmoi, the actual proper name of the olive is not iguri, ela abruti shmoi, the real name of it is abruti, the amrila samrusi shmoi, or others say it's called samrusi, the lamanikha shmoi iguri, so why is it called iguri? Sheshamne ogur besoiche, because the oil is collected inside it. Meaning, Rashi says, it's not like, for example, apples or other such fruits where you have to squeeze the fruit in order to get out the olive, in order to get out the juice. Here, the juice is dispersed throughout the fruit. Here, it's like collected in one place, like just liquid that was absorbed, and you can get it out very easily. So that's the kind of zayis. When we talk about a kazayis, that's the type of zayis that we're talking about. Very well, then, Rabbi Yechanan ate an olive of some other kind, which was some other kind of olive which is larger.
So one second, if you say, let's say that of this olive, what one third is this watery collection?
Okay, which is actual olive oil.
Because
you eat the olive. No, because you eat the olive with the oil in it. But in this, and then you eat the olive. But first of all, the point is only the iguri olive, we're saying, has the oil like separate from the flesh, kind of like it is in a grape, for example. You're still eating the olive, and with it comes the oil. The meat of the olive still has the oil, and then you're still eating the meat and having the oil at the same time. So they both count towards the kazayas. But in this case, Rabbi Yochanan is eating an olive of some other type. So therefore, yeah. All right, getting back to the matter of
so
we can conclude therefore that Rabbi Yochanan was correct to make an alah eitzah. Well, now the Gemara had brought up the possibility before that maybe actually Rabbi Yochanan would say that olives, once they're pickled, lose their ha'eitz status, just like we said cooked vegetables might lose their hadama status and be shakol, and then there's no proof because after bracha he may have been burned a fushes. And if Tosfos was the saying over here, not necessarily do you need a kazayas afterwards to say burned a fushes. But okay. So getting back to this matter of cooked vegetables, the Gemara says, name a ketanoi. Would we have to say that this is actually a machloit ketanoi? This question about cooked vegetables, what bracha do you make on them? Mind you, actually, Jukduke Sosin points out, I mean, we're going to be talking about Talmudim or Bakapara. Bakapara himself is like on the cusp between Tanoim and Amiroim. The Talmudim, how do you consider them Tanoim? So he brings from Gersois that don't say name of Tanoim, they just begin the story. Okay, the Hanu Tre Talmudi Davyasri Kameh de Bakapara, two Talmudim were sitting in front of Bakapara. He viewed the fun of Kruv, they brought in front of him or in front of them, whatever, they brought cabbage, cooked cabbage, the durmaskin, kruv is cabbage, the durmaskin, and durmaskin, we'll talk in a second what those are, opargios, and the meat of a kind of a type of bird, Rashi translates it as partridge. What are durmaskin? Rashi says that it's also cooked vegetables, or certain kind of vegetables distantly related to spinach and other such plants like that, and it was also cooked. So Rashi then brings another explanation from his Rebbe that it means plums. And Rashi says, I find that hard to understand, because then the whole point we're going to be discussing over here is whether all three of these things are shakol, or whether some of them are hadama and some of them are shakol. So the meat is definitely shakol. The cooked cabbage, that's what we have to figure out. And the dromaskin is also what we have to figure out. But if you say dromaskin are plums, what do you mean? Raw plums are ha'eitz, and cooked plums, who cooks plums?
Many people cook plums.
Okay, it's not that. Well, Rashi actually doesn't spell that out. But Rashi just says that plums would be ha'eitz. So yeah, in fact, Gilyon HaShasra, that kid Eger, says that maybe in fact, once the plums are cooked, then they would be shakol. So why does it actually have a problem with explaining that it's plums? And so, okay, the Pnei Yeshua and the Netziv, and they have a lot of discussion, pro and con, about the different possibilities over here. Maybe Rashi would say that they were raw, if we were going to say they're plums, we would have to say they're raw, because people don't usually cook plums. They do sometimes, sure, you have stewed plums, but it's not that common, necessarily. Ooh, okay, anyway. So those are the three, so that was the meal. Kruv, Dermaskin, and Tyria. Nothing but Kapora Rishus La'echem Mehem Mavarach. But Kapora gave one of them permission to say the bracha and be motzi everybody else.
On all of them?
Well, on one of them. So the question is, which one is he going to make the bracha on? And then which one is he going to make the bracha on? Or do we have multiple brachas over here? There are Mephoshim who explain that Bakapara himself wasn't eating with them, so therefore he's not making the bracha himself. Anyway, okay. Kofetz Uberach Alapardias. So one of the Talmudim jumped up, and on his own, once Bakapara gave permission to one of the Talmudim to say the bracha, he jumped up right away. He hurried and said the bracha shakol on the parvias, on the meat first. Liglig olav chaveri. Then his friends started mocking and laughing at him. That, what do you not know the halacha? Other brachas come before shakol. Plus Bakapara. Bakapara was angry at them. Omar, first he says, actually, I'm not angry at the one who said the bracha. I'm actually upset at the one who laughed at the other one. Im chaverecha doyma kumishle tom tam basa me'olam. Now your friend, okay, we can say, you know why he said charcoal first on the pyreus, even though there's more important foods over here, because he's acting like a person who never tasted meat before. To him, meat is chaviv, which we're going to be discussing in our sugya now, the concept of chaviv, that you have different foods in front of you, that under certain circumstances you make a bracha on the one you like best. So therefore, he has a certain reason to do that. That to him, meat is more important than anything else. So what are you mocking him for? Then Chazar v'Amar. Then.
Even if there was a reason to mock, was that an acceptable behavior? And mock your friend.
Well, that's why Rav Kapara is upset
about the brothel.
No, he's upset about the malaglev. He says, he says that loya mevorach ani koyes elal malaglev. I'm not so much angry at the mevorach, but rather at the malaglev, because after all malaglev, what are you laughing about? After all malaglev, because of Omar, then Rav Kapara said differently. Loya malaglev ani koyes elal mevorach ani koyes. Actually, I'm not so upset. I'm not so angry with the one who made fun, but I'm angry with the mevorach. But Omar, and he says, listen, you should have asked me first. Even if you're going to say there's no chokhmah over here, even if you're going to say that you don't necessarily honor some a greater chokhmah, and Rav Kapara, after all, is the greater chokhmah, is the Rebbe. Even if you're going to say that that in a case like this, you don't honor the chokhmah, zikna ein kan. Isn't there actual elderliness? In other words, I'm older than you. You should have asked me first which one you should make the bracha on and pater the other one.
So he said he wasn't eating with them.
He still could ask Rav Kapara. Rav Kapara is still sitting over there. We could still ask him, Rebbe, you gave us permission to make the bracha, but which one should come first? Marshall explains that actually what it was is first Rav Kapara said the one, then after the first one, asked Mechila from him, he said, actually now I'm more angry at the other one. Ibn Yaakov says that maybe he said each of these things to a different one when the other one wasn't in the room in order not to embarrass them in front of the other. And Akosev in Enyakov, the author of Enyakov himself, has an explanation. He discusses that you see from this that Rav Kapara is more concerned about his Talmud's cover than his own, because first he brings up the point that you laughed at your friend, and only then does he bring up the point you should have given me cover. Yeah.
Why does he say in chokhmah?
In chokhmah in kan.
In kan yura.
No, because we're not talking about chokhmah versus yura. We're saying even if you're thinking you didn't have to honor me from the point of view of chokhmah, but still, you should at least honor me from the point of view of Zikna, that I'm older than you, and it would have been right to ask first which one to make bracha on. Tana, we learn in the Braisa. By the way, now Rashi points out over here that this was actually even if these were actually during a meal, you have a concept which we're going to deal with later on Daf Mem Aleph, called Dvorim HaBoim Machmachasoda and Dvorim She'enim Boim Machmachasoda. Sometimes you have things that are brought during the meal that are not one of the regular courses of the meal, and those so are they included with the Bracha HaMotzi? So Rashi over there says no. We're going to have a whole Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos there later on we're going to have a Gemara first, and then we're going to have Rashi and Tosfos about under what circumstances are things that are brought during the meal included and whatnot. So here, Rashi explains, according to his Shita, that even though these things were during a meal of bread, because normally people in those days, people didn't just sit down for a meal of crude Damascus and Tavius, but nevertheless, even though it was during a meal of bread, they're not Dvorim HaBoim Machmachasoda. They're not part of the regular courses that are eaten together with the bread. Therefore, there would have needed to be a separate bracha. Okay, so the Gemara says Tana, we learn in a Braisa, because both of them offended Bar Kapara, Ushneim Loyasir Shnasa, neither of them lived out the rest of the year. Because offending a person his Rebbe is a very serious matter. So my law. So now, thus far, it's not necessarily. I mean, we don't mean necessarily. In other words, that Bar Kapara davened for something to happen to them, Chas v'Shalom. But the Hashem looked out for Bar Kapara's honor. So now, thus far, the story. Now let's analyze it. My law, v'ha kamisavi. Shouldn't we have to say that that's the underlying machlokes? The one who made the bracha held that cooked vegetables and meat are all shakol. So in other words, all three things that are being brought to the table are shakol, because you have two types of shlokas. Again, this is why Rashi has a problem with saying that dromaskin over here means prunes, which there are definitely places in Chas where dromaskin means prunes, but over here, or not prunes, plums, whatever. But again, Rashi says over here it would be hard to say that, because then how would he talk about shakol? Plums are right. Unless we were to have to say that they're cooked. But apparently Rashi didn't want to assume that they were.
Cooked, they were.
Well, cooked, it depends. If it's normal to cook prunes, then they'd still be hyped, just like we said. Right, so then they'd be charcoal. Right. Okay, anyway. So if we say that shlokos, if we say that shlokos and paragias are all shakol, so they're all the same bracha anyway, so then you should make the bracha on the one that you like most of all. And therefore, he made the bracha on the meat, because to him that was chaviv, because, like the Bakapara said, he acted like somebody who never tasted meat. Whereas the one who laughed at him said, shlokas bar pri hadama, paugias shakal neighbor bar. No. Cooked vegetables would be hadama. Paugias, meanwhile, being meat, is definitely going to be shakal. So you have two different brachas, hilkach pera of it. And in that case, then you make the bracha on the, you make the bracha on the produce first, because that's the more important bracha. Tosfos points out that the reason why it's considered the more important bracha is because it's more distinctive. Bara Pri Hadama applies only to things that grow from the ground, whereas Shakol is the universal bracha that includes everything. So if you understand it that way, then you see that these two Talmidim are arguing on exactly the point. Are cooked cabbage and cooked grumaskin, are they Shakol or are they Hadama?
And unfortunately, Bakapara doesn't bring an answer. I mean,
you know what? The Yerushalmi, when it tells the story, says, look at this. In the end, two Talmud Chachamim passed away as a result of the story, and we still don't know what the answer is. Yeah. Anyway, so should we say that? The answer is loy. Not necessarily do we have to say that. The Kulal Meshlokas are probably a Shahakal near Bidvari. We could say that everybody agrees that all of them are Shahakal. They could just be arguing on the Svara. Within things that are the same bracha, what do you say first? Mar Sava Chaviv Adif, so one of the Talmidim, the one who made the bracha, held that Chaviv is more important. To him, meat was more important than Paugias, that's the name of the bird. So according to him, it's a bird, I said before, Rashi translates it as a partridge.
Oh.
Okay, anyway, yeah, that's what I was saying. So he would hold that paugias are more important because they're chaviv, because they're more tasty and important to him. He likes eating them better. And therefore you would make the bracha on that and be mostly the other things of that. Or marsava kruv or disdesign, whereas the other one, the malaglig, would hold that that the cabbage is more important because cabbage fills you up and meat doesn't. Okay, so if we say that way, then it means that both of them would say that shlokas are shakol. The Rashba points out, I mean, the fact of the matter is, that the Ritva rather points out, that the fact of the matter is the halacha is not like that. The halacha is, like we said before, that most cooked vegetables are hadama. So the Gemara is just using it over here as a dichui. The Gemara is saying you can't necessarily prove from the story one way or the other, but the halacha is still, as we said it before,
they made a mistake.
Well, so according to that, the first one made a mistake. So according to that, the Malagra was more correct. The Mavarich made the mistake of thinking that chaviv goes first even when it's different brachas.
Which is not the case.
Which is not the case, because, yeah. Okay. So this is the concept of chaviv. So briefly, then, the idea is that, Tosfos discusses over here, that when they're all the same bracha, then you go according to chaviv. When you have, one has a higher level bracha than the other, for example, hadama versus shakol, then you say the hadama first. When it's for example ha'etz versus hadama, then in principle you should say ha'etz first, although you're not actually required to. If the hadama is more chaviv, you are allowed to make the hadama first. And Tosfos mentions one more thing: if one of them is from the shivat haminim, then better you should be making the bracha on the one of the shivat haminim, unless
wheat
and barley actually would be, if you have them in front of you in the form of cake or cookies or what have you, then you're making mezonos on them, and mezonos goes ahead of her eighth anyway. But we mean any of the other five: grapes, figs, dates, pomegranates, and olives. Then you would make a bracha, and then let's say you also have with them apples. Let's say then preferably you should be making a bracha on the one of the shivat haminim and pass to the other ones. Okay, so there are dinim about that in Shulchan Aruch and in Hilchos Birkas Hanan, and the Alter Rebbe spends a few in Hilchos Birkas Hanan, and the Alter Rebbe spends a few paragraphs discussing the ins and outs of Chavid. Interesting, worth mentioning in that connection, actually, in Shulchan Rashi, it mentions that there were certain kinds of foods that Rashi liked a lot. One of them was meat prepared in a certain way, although it's not clear from the Shulchan how, and another one was eggs fried in honey. And when they had the eggs fried in honey, I have no idea, I never tried it. But when they would bring those to the table, Rashi, holding about, who based on our concept of chaviv, would make a bracha on them first, and only then wash and have bread. And he said, because this way I have a chance to say a bracha on something that I really like. and then to praise Hashem for something that I really like.
So what are we talking about?
So yeah, so interesting little detail over there that now you know what it's mentioned in Trubus Rashi. So now you know what was one of Rashi's favorite foods. Yeah. Okay.
Eggs and honey.
Eggs fried in honey, yeah. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. Amr of Dera, Ki Havein and De Rav Huna. When we were in the yeshiva of Rav Huna, as Talmidim, Amr Alon, so Rav Huna told us like this. Hani Gagulidi Delifta, turnip. Roshi Lafosis, Rashi says, meaning the turnip root. We don't mean the leaves.
Gagalidi
is the list. I mean, means turnips. Turnip root.
Yeah,
what's Gagalidi? Gagalidi means like the heads of. So whatever. It means the actual root of the turnip. And here we're talking about, Rashi says, we're talking about if they're eating it raw. Mm-hmm. So Palmino Prima Rabba, if they cut them into large pieces, then they're still bird of Priha Dhamma, but Prima Zutta, but if they cut them into tiny pieces, then they lose their Chashivus, and therefore it's shackled near Bidvani. Then the Chiyasan, the Beir of Yehuda, then Rav Zera continues, when we then left Rav Huna's yeshiva and came to learn by Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna passed away a couple of years before Rav Huna, so then all of the Talmidim went to learn by Rav Huna. Rav Huna passed away, and then before Rav Yehuda, Geras Rav Shira Gaon tells us that Rav Huna outlived Rav Huna by 2 years. So during those 2 years, the Talmidim went to learn by Rav Yehuda then. Anyway, so when we came to the yeshiva of Rav Yehuda, says Rav Zera, Omar Lon, so he told us, actually, no, Aidi Bara Priha Dhamma. Either way, whether they're cut up into large pieces or small pieces, either way, it's still Bara Priha Dhamma. Bahai de Bahai, you should say, once it was cut up into such tiny pieces, it should lose its shivus. No, Bahai de Parminu Tfei, because the only reason they cut them into such small pieces, Kech de Namtek Taimei, in order to sweeten the taste of it. Because raw turnips are a little bit sharp, a little bit bitter, and they're cutting them up into small pieces improves the taste. But they still have the chshivos, and therefore they're still very priyada. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi says, Ki aven and beira kahana.
By implication, if you cut into pieces and it loses the taste,
then it sounds like it would be downgraded to shakoyim. Amar Ravashi, Ki aven and beira kahana. When we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, Amar Lon, he tells us like this, Tapshila de silka. If you have a cooked dish of silka and trodin, Rashi says silka is a little later, Rashi says silka is trodin, which are beets. You actually have the two different parts of beets that are edible. So sometimes the Gemara means one, sometimes it means the root, sometimes it means the leaves. You have beet, the beet root is edible, of course, and they sell it in stores. And you also have beet greens. You actually have a type of beet that they grow more for the greens, whether they're the leaves of it. And in which case they sell it in the I don't think you find it regularly in the stores, but you can find it in some stores as sold as charred. So which one the Gemara means over here, whether it means the root or whether it means the leaves, whatever. Anyway, so a dish of cooked silka, deloy machshavo kimcha, if they don't put a lot of flour in it, so they only put in a little bit of flour to make it stick together, then you say hadama because the flour is bottle okay, because as we learned the other day, even though we said the other day that things that contain flour are mizonis, but that's we said not when the flour is just put in order to make it stick together. Only when the didn't have to be the flour was the majority. It had to be that the flour was there to give it a taste or to make it more nutritious or whatever. Here it's the flour is being put in just as a binder. So therefore it'd still be bar pri hadama. Well, you put enough of it in. No. The lifter, on the other hand, continues Ravashi, Rav Kahana told us that when you have a dish of cooked turnips, the makshuba kimchatse, where there they do put in a lot of flour, then burn in a mezonis, because then the flour is considered important enough. But Vahada Omar, then says Ravashi, Rav Kahana changed his mind and said, no, Aidi Bara Priha Dhamma, either way, even if it's cooked turnips, and you put a lot of flour in, it's still Bara Priha Dhamma, Bahai the Shodi Bakim Khatfe, because the only reason they put in a lot of flour is the Buki Ba'alma Abdullah. They only do it in order to make it stick together, just in order to thicken it up. And therefore, no matter, even though they put in a lot of flour, then it would still be Bara Priha Dhamma. Unless maybe, yeah, the flour is the majority of it. But so you don't need, ordinarily, you don't need the flour to be the majority to make hadam, to make mezonis on it. But that would be only if you're putting it in for the flavor or the nutrition or whatever. Here you're putting it in primarily just in order to bind it together. Omer of Chista. So in this connection, Rav Chista says, since we're talking about a dish of cooked trudin, beets or beet greens or whatever, tabshol shol trudin, a dish of cooked trudin, before we said silka, now we're saying trudin, So Rashi says it's the same thing, but again, it might be more finer distinction. It might be that one's the root and one's the green. Anyway, so a dish of that.
So
according to that, I don't know. I mean, Rashi just so I don't know. Anyway, okay. So Chizkiah says Shtab Shol Shol Chodin Yofel Olay V'Toyv La'Inayim. It's good for your heart. It's good for your eyes. V'Chol Shekem V'Nei Me'Ayim. And how much more so it's good for your stomach. Amar Abaye V'Hudi Yosef Abayt Chodin V'Beets or V'Beets Greens as the case may be. Amar Abaye V'Hudi Yosef Abayt Tafti. This is only when is it good? When is it good for you like that? Is where you put it on the stove to cook. The oven toich, and it gets so cooked, it gets so softened in the cooking that it makes a sound as it's cooking toich. Yeah, when a thick stew is bubbling on the stove, it makes noises like that. What? No, not necessarily the food itself. As bubbles form in it and then pop, then it makes sound. So yeah. Okay. The Papa says, here's another game. Chiefly, it's obvious to me as follows. Maya de silka to silka. When you have a soup, or when you have water in which silka was cooked, then it has the same din as the silka, and you would make the same bracha hadam on it. Umaya de lifta to lift to lifta, and similarly, when you have turnip soup, then the bracha on it would be like the turnips themselves, also hadama. Umaya de kolushalki to kolushalki, and the juice or the water, the soup, whatever, of any other kind of vegetable, would have the same din as the vegetable itself. Now,
that is
not halacha. Now, Rav Papa is using that only as an introduction to the next question that he's going to ask, but we've shown him ask a big question. We learned before that juices, that fruit juices, are only shakal.
Right.
That we said, for example, that we said over there honey, we said over there even honey from dates, even though it's mentioned in the Torah, is only shakal. So why are we here all of a sudden? Are we saying that soup from vegetables is hadama? So there's a couple of major approaches that the Rishonim take. The Rashba says the difference is that fruit usually are eaten raw and not cooked and not pressed, whereas vegetables are usually eaten cooked.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, that would be the difference.
Mm-hmm.
The Rosh says that it's because juice doesn't necessarily have the taste of the fruit that it came from, whereas soup has the taste of the vegetable that it comes from. Now that you mentioned it, Yaakov Emden has a big problem with that. He says, practically speaking, it's hard to see that. He has a whole other long explanation of the Rosh that's similar to one of the other explanations over here. But okay, the halacha. So wait. And then you have a third explanation from Rabbeinu Yonah and the Mordechai that soup is eaten as part of a meal, whereas a drink is not necessarily something that it's not something that goes along with the bread. It's a drink. So therefore, it has different meanings. So therefore, in Shulchan Aruch it brings a couple of these opinions, and therefore, you have actually different distinctions that it makes in Shulchan Aruch, whether you're cooking the vegetable in order to drink the soup, are you having the soup by itself, or are you having it with the vegetables. The result is actually that most kinds of vegetable soups are hadama actually. Bean soup, corn soup.
If the beans is still inside the soup or the corn is still inside the soup?
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. For example, bean soup or corn soup or whatever, generally you have the beans in there, so there's the corn itself in there. So the point is that the hadama on the vegetables is going to pop through the soup as well. We don't say that the soup has a separate bracha shakol. There are actually, in Rabbi Marlow's guide, he lists a couple of kinds of soups over there that are shakol. Because you don't have the actual vegetable in there. For example, he mentions over there split pea soup and tomato soup that are shakal.
But they're intact. They're not brown.
Well, no, split pea soup. In split pea soup, I don't know, split pea soup that I've seen usually has the peas in it, so I'm not real sure why he says it's shakal. But tomato soup, you don't have the actual pieces of tomato in there. It's just, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but for most kinds of vegetable soup, though, the bracha for it is hadama. For any of these reasons, either because it tastes more of the vegetable than fruit juice does of the fruit,
or because
most vegetable soups are hadama, or the other reason is again because you eat them as part of a meal. Okay. In other words, when we say it's part of a meal, in other words, they accompany the bread. You have a concept that the Gemara calls lifton, which is that you have the main course of a meal in those days was bread, and then you have other things that are meant to accompany the bread to make it taste better. So a soup would be one example of that. You dip bread in it. So now Rav Papa's question is, given that that's true of most kinds of vegetables, that you say hadama on the soup, But Maya deshivsa mai. What about when you have water that you put into it, that what if not water or soup or whatever of shivsa? Shivsa is a plant. In English, it's called anise. Rashi translates it similarly. Anit, it says in most European languages, they have a similar the name for it is fairly similar. It's a seed from a certain plant that has a very distinctive smell and taste. It smells a lot like black licorice. If you ever tasted arak and flavored with that. Anyway, so like. Well, not so much bitter. It's got a certain distinctive smell and taste to it. Anyway, the point is, if you cook that up as a soup, unlike with other vegetables, you're actually going to eat the vegetable that was cooked as well as the soup that comes from it. Here, you don't eat the actual sheves. You don't eat the actual anise seed itself. You just have the flavor of it. So that's the question. Do we say that you're putting it in the soup to make it have a sweet taste, and therefore you would say bar priha dama, just like you would for any other kind of vegetable soup? Or do they put it in mainly in order to get rid of the bad smells and the froth and whatever that would be in the soup? In other words, it's not really there to give a taste of its own.
It's to take away other
bad smells that there might be there, right? So toshma. We can prove from a Mishnah. Hashebes, this anise, Mishnah Natan B'Kedera, after it gave a flavor to a cooked dish, so again, the seeds themselves are not edible at that point, Eidma Mishum Truma, then the dinim of Truma no longer apply to it. So if you have anise of Truma that you may use to make soup, or you put into a cooked dish or whatever, once the flavor of it has been extracted and is in the soup or the dish or whatever, then a zar would be allowed to eat the remaining seeds, even though they were Truma, because it's not considered food anymore. The Eidma Tama Truma Seuchlin, and doesn't have so much Seuchlin for the same reason, it's not considered food anymore. So we see, therefore, the point of it is to give a flavor. We say, one, because it says Mishnah Tam, once its flavor was extracted into the food. So you see, therefore, the primary purpose of it is flavor. Shmamina, therefore, that proves it. And therefore, the answer is it would be just like any other vegetable. And you would say Hadama on the soup that's made from it.
So anything where the flavor was taken out?
Anything, in other words, either where the vegetable itself is actually going to be eaten, as is true of most vegetables too,
right.
Or even in this case, where you're not going to eat the sheves, but nevertheless, the flavor that you're putting into the soup for flavor.
Right.
Achronim talk about the question in that case, what about tea and coffee? Isn't it exactly the same
right.
kind of thing? You don't actually drink the tea leaves or the coffee ground. And you do have some Achronim who argue that maybe indeed, based on our Gemara over here, they should be Hadama. But of course, almost nobody does that. Everybody says shakol on tea and coffee. But Tzemach Tzedek talks about in one of his tshuvos that maybe the reason is because the same distinction that we said before about foods versus drinks. Again, where we said that the Rabbeinu Yonah and the Mordechai distinction between fruit juice versus vegetable soup is one is meant as an accompaniment for a meal, and the other one is meant as a separate thing. The same thing. Tea and coffee are not a drink. They're not a liftun. Therefore, the din might be different than with this anise soup that we're talking about over here, which is meant to be as part of the meal. So that would justify why we say shakol on it, just like because we say shakol in general on all drinks. We said even when they're drinks. Because it's a drink. So we said even drinks that contain the chameshes aminim, we still say shakol on them. So therefore tea and coffee would be similar to that. With that said, Achronim say that maybe if you accidentally said hadam on it, then you're yotze b'diavad. All right.
So
most kinds of soups you say hadama. Most kinds of soups you say hadama. There are, right. So again, if you don't have the vegetable there, then maybe it's different. Again, most of these soups you usually eat the vegetable and you eat the actual soup as well. Certain kinds, for example, tomato soup, you don't eat the actual tomatoes with it, so therefore those are shakol. Split pea soup, I'm not sure about it. Split pea soup, I'm not sure about. Again, in Rabbi Marlow's guide, he lists split pea soup as shakol. I'm not sure why, because I think split pea soup usually still contains the peas, but I don't know. Neither are anything you make soup from. Okay, I don't know. Unless it's one of those kinds of things where we're saying that maybe we said before that you have vegetables that are better raw than cooked. Maybe peas are an example of that where they're actually better raw than cooked and therefore they get downgraded. Let's talk about Hamoiti. Hard bread that you put it in a bowl in order that you they put it in a bowl in order to soften it in the soup. So you still say Hamoiti on it because even though you put it in soup, nevertheless it's still pieces of bread. Now we learned before, we learned a couple of days ago about the case of pirurim. We said you have a case of broken up pieces of bread. For example, we talked about croutons, other such things over there, where there's a distinction whether there is a kazayas and less than a kazayas. And we said that even if they're not a kazayas, you still stand on hamoiti as long as they have the shape of bread, terisa dinama. So how does that fit with what we're saying over here? So actually, Tosfos says that all Gemara is not necessarily talking about over here the question on the actual pieces themselves. No question, maybe Hamotzi. Rather, the question is, Tosfos says, if you have in front of you a whole loaf of bread and you also have these pieces of bread that we put in the soup, can you make Hamotzi on those pieces or should you be making Hamotzi on the whole loaf of bread and then pass away in the pieces? So according to that, Rav Chiya Ba'ashi is saying that no, you could even make the bracha hamotzi on the pieces in the soup if you want. You have other Rishonim who actually say that maybe even it would be preferable to, because the pieces in the soup are like more ready to eat right now. They've already been they're not really less like bread because they still have their shape. They still have their shape, and they already have the lishkan with them. They already have the accompanying food with them, as opposed to bread. You still have to go and wrap it, or make a sandwich of it, or whatever, to do that. And therefore, in that sense, then Rav Chiya Ba'ashi might be saying that in that case, these pieces of bread that are in the soup are even more preferable to make hamotzi on. Okay. Or pligah de Rav Chiya. However, the Gemara says he's arguing with Rav Chiya, regular Rav Chiya, that is, the amr Rav Chiya, tzarech shetich lebracha in the past, because Rav Chiya says what you have to do is when you're saying hamotzi, you have to, as you're finishing the bracha hamotzi, finish cutting the bread. As the Gemara is going to discuss in the next couple of lines, what the actual halacha on that is. So the point is, that presupposes that you have to have a whole loaf of bread, or at least something that you can cut. Whereas over here, the past Snuma Bakara, you're not cutting it, because it's already cut. However, Maskif Lo Rava, but Rava says, why do you think that it's a contradiction? Why are you saying that pieces of bread that are in the soup? The word snuma, by the way, Rashi translates means hard. Other Rishonim translates means broken up.
These pieces are bigger than a kazayas.
No, it doesn't really matter. We said before that even if they're less than a kazayas, we said as long as they have terisa dinama, as long as they have the appearance of bread, we said you still make hamotzi on them. Actually, you have Rishonim over there who learned that the distinction the Gemara was making before between kazayas and less than a kazayas is if the pieces are stuck together using some kind of binder. But here, they're not. They're just loose in the soup. They're just loose in the soup. And that you actually have Rishonim who say that maybe even if they don't have terisa dinama, even if to begin with they were not made in the form of bread, then maybe even you'd still be saying hamotzi on them. Anyway, so Rava is saying, so why are you telling me that, according to that, you're saying that Rav Chiya disagrees with Rav Chiya Ba'ashi and says that you can't be making hamotzi on the pieces in the soup because mishum de kikalia bracha prusa kikalia, because you have to be finishing the bracha as you're finishing to cut the bread? Well, in that case, why, and in that case, you're saying that the pieces that are in the soup do not have that chashivos because they're already cut up.
Right.
Well, by that logic, alapach nami. So if you make a bracha on regular bread, kika gomra prusa gomra, don't you have the same problem? If you're finishing up the bracha as you finish cutting the bread, then it comes out. You finish the bracha over a cut piece of bread. And the whole point is, you're supposed to be making a bracha on a whole loaf. So what's the difference? Elo, omar rava, mazborach ba'achakas betzeah. So Rava says, no, we can't say like what Rav Chiya is saying, that you start cutting during the bracha hamotzi and finish the cutting as you finish hamotzi lachem min ha'aretz. Rather, what you do first you make the whole bracha, then first you make the bracha, and then you cut. So this way, when you're finishing the bracha, then you're saying it on a whole loaf.
And Rav Chiya
was saying that you start cutting as you say the bracha, and you finish the bracha and the cutting at the same time. But Rav is saying that doesn't seem to work. Okay, so what do we do? Like, so now Doi abdikir apriya, the chachamim of Nahada followed apriya, and they would finish the bracha as they finished the cutting. But Rabbanan abdikirava, the other Rabbanan, the other Tamar chachamim would follow Rabba.
First the bracha
and then the cutting. So we'll talk about in a second how we actually do it l'maisa, and if there's a difference between Shabbos and weekdays. So hold on. Amr Ravina, Amr li aim. So Ravina says, my mother told me, Avucha Ovid Kirabchia, your father, Ravina's father passed away when he was young, so his mother had to raise him, and she would tell him what the Satan Hanhogas of his father. Your father would follow Rabchia, do Amr Rabchia, Sarach Shitichla, Bracha Ima Pass. But Rabbanan Abdi Kirava. Meanwhile, his mother told him, you should know that the other Chachamim follow Rabba. The halacha though is like Rava, that you first make the bracha and then you cut.
On a complete load.
You make the bracha on a complete load. Now though, Tosfos says it actually doesn't mean to make the entire bracha and only then start cutting, because then you have the problem of hesach hadas. Then you have the problem of a hesach between the bracha and the eating. So actually what it is you should start, so the way it's brought in Shulchan Aruch is, on weekdays, you start cutting first, but you don't cut deeply enough. You cut enough that if you were to pick up the loaf by the cut end, the whole loaf, you'd be able to lift up the whole loaf with it. Then at that point, the loaf is still considered whole. And then after the bracha amotzi, then you finish the cutting. So that way, at least you have the minimum amount of hesed. Shabbos is different, though. Tosfos goes on to say, and this is also brought in Shulchan Aruch. Shabbos is different because you have a mitzvah to make. You have to make a bracha on lechem mishnah, and you have the same issue. If you're cutting, then you may cut too deeply, and then the piece is not considered attached anymore. If you pick it up, then it would break off.
You could also do it superficially.
So because of that, our minhag is that we make a mark on the bread. We don't actually cut into it. We make a mark with the knife on the bread. Then we make hamotzi. So that symbolically, we're beginning to cut it first. Then we make the bracha hamotzi. Then we cut it and dip it in salt and eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference in that regard between Shabbos and weekdays.
How come it's not brought in the Gemara?
Because the Gemara doesn't go into those details. This is the Gemara has to leave something for the Rishonim to discuss.
But it would be considered a hefsek
if you were to first start the cutting after saying hamotzi, then it would be too much of a hefsek.
The Svarim don't like using, don't cut their challah.
What do they do?
They break it.
Okay, same difference then. Okay. So then in that case, then I guess you have less of an issue.
Would say that's also a hefsek?
Well, it depends how long it takes, I guess. That's why Tosfos is saying you should try to minimize the amount of hefsek. By the way, that kind of thing, as far as that if you pick it up by one end, whether the whole thing will lift up with it, is very much an idea when it comes to matzahs on Pesach. Sometimes you have a matzah that's partly broken through.
Right.
Is it still considered a shleima or not? So the halacha is, similarly, if you're able to pick it up by the smaller part, and the whole matzah lifts up with it and it doesn't break apart, then it's still considered a shleima. Well, in other words, you have a matzah that has a cracked part way through it.
Yes.
So you pick it up by one of the cracked sides, by the smaller cracked side, and see if the whole matzah goes with it, then it's still considered a whole matzah. It's not the nut. Okay. It's matzah. Okay, so now we have a further discussion on this topic about pieces of bread versus whole bread. Hey, view this name, Pesachim Shleimim. Suppose that they brought in front of a person pieces of bread as well as whole loaves of bread. So which one should you say the bracha on? So Rav Huna says, if you want, you can make the bracha even on the pieces. And then with that you pass the whole one. So Rashi learns actually that what Rav Huna is saying is, if they're equal in size, then you can make the bracha on whichever one you want, whichever one you prefer. But all this din is talking about, by the way, all this discussion that we're going to have is only if you're actually planning to eat both of them. You're not obligated to say, if you have slices of bread, for example, and you also have a whole loaf of bread over there, you're not obligated to eat the whole loaf of bread just because it's there. Because if all you wanted to eat was the slices, let's say they're different kinds of bread. But we're talking about where you want to eat all of them.
If you have a loaf and slices,
if you're not planning to eat the loaf, then everybody would agree that you can just make a bracha on the slices. But if we're talking about over here where you're planning to eat the loaf and the slices, but still Rav Huna is saying you could make the bracha on the slices if you want. And if Rashi goes on to say that if the slices are actually bigger than the whole loaf, let's say, yeah, the whole loaf is one of those little birkalach, and the slices come from a regular size challah, then Rashi learns that Rav Huna would say that you have to make the bracha on the slices because they're larger. Okay, Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that we're talking about even when the slices are bigger, but still, Rav Huna is saying if you want, you can make a bracha on the slices, but you could also make on the whole ones because
they're not bigger.
Because when they are bigger,
what's the...
because even then, so then you have your choice. You could make a bracha on the whole one because it's whole, or you can make a bracha on the slices because they're bigger. But Tosfos learns if the whole one is equal in size to the slices, then Rav Huna would agree you make a bracha on the whole one. Okay. Rabbi Yechanan says the best possible way is to make the bracha on the whole one, so not the whole one, the loaf, not the individual pieces. The halacha, by the way, Tosfos mentioned, is like Rabbi Yechanan. Ava prusa shel chitin or shleima min ha'sa'orin. But what if there were different types? What if the slice is from wheat bread, and the whole loaf is barley bread? And then everybody would agree that you make the bracha on the slice of wheat bread because wheat is more important, is more important than barley. So Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba says that actually, the reason why wheat is more important than barley, Tosfos mentions, not so much because wheat is human food and barley is not, but because wheat is mentioned earlier in the pasuk than barley. We're going to deal in a couple of days with the order within the Shiva Saminim themselves, which one is more and less important. So here, wheat is more important than barley because mentioned earlier in the pasuk. That's not the real reason, right? Tosfos mentions from a Tosefta a couple of other distinctions. It depends on the quality of the bread. It depends whether one of them is Pas Akum and the other one is Pas Yisrael. So yeah, you have different details over there, different considerations that determine which one you should make the bracha for, which one you should make the bracha on. Okay, so Amar Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba k'tanoim. This is actually like a machlokes tanoim. The question of whether it's better to make the bracha on the whole loaf or on the slices is similar to a machlokes tanoim in a different context. A Mishnah says, "Turmin botzel katan shalim." When you're giving truma, so when you're giving truma and you're separating truma to give to the kohen, you take as truma a whole onion, even if it's small, as a loichatsi botzel gadol, not a half an onion, even if it's large. And Rashi says again, just like with the slices and the whole bread, we can mean even if a half a large onion is larger than the entire small onion. Nevertheless, the Tanakhama is saying that you should be given the kohen the whole onion, even though it's smaller, because it's considered more important. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a loichi. Rabbi Yehuda says no, it's not like that. Elachatsi botzel gadol. You give him half of a large onion. My lav v'hokam mitzvisa, wouldn't we say that's machlokes? It's a marasava choshev adif or marasava shalim adif. So that the Tanakhama holds that what's more important comes first, and Rabbi Yehuda would say choshev adif. So a half a large onion is more choshev than one whole small onion. Or marasava shalim adif, whereas the Tanakhama would hold the whole one is adif. So that would be the same machlokes as Rav Huna and Rabbi Yechanan. The answer is not necessary. When there is a kohen present over there, the kula amalek tligi the choshev adif, then everybody would agree that what's more choshev is what you should give him. So therefore, you should be giving him the half a large onion. He tligi the lekka kohen. The machlokas is
between
onions, you're saying. So then you give him the half a large onion rather than the whole small one because the half a large onion is more choshev. He tligi the lekka kohen. The machlokas would be when there's no kohen around. It's not. Namely, we learn in another Mishnah, also in Masechta Trumas, Kol Mokam Shiyesh Kohen, whenever there is a Kohen available, Turdim Min HaYofer, you always take Truma from the best type of produce, because the Kohen is right there, and you can give it to him, and he'll be able to eat it before it spoils. But Kol Mokam Shiyesh ain't Kohen, but if there's no Kohen around, then you're going to have to be storing the Truma for a while, Turdim Min HaMiskayim. Then the Tanakhama says over there, you take Truma from what will last longer, what will be preserved longer. So in this case, a small whole onion will last longer in storage than a half a large onion. Rabbi Yehuda says, even in that case, you still take truma from the best. Okay, it's going to spoil. That's not your problem. You're still required to take the best and give it, and separate it. And the best would be the half a large one. The half a large one, because a large onion is more important than a small one. No. It is more perishable. That's what I'm trying to kind of say. You shouldn't do it. Right. Regardless of the fact that it's more perishable. Okay. All right. So if we understand the Mishnah that way, then not necessarily is that relevant to our case over here about slices of bread and whole loaves of bread. Lamai said that Amman Paskins, according to the straightforward meaning of the Mishnah, that's not even a matter of whether there's a kohen there or not. Either way, you're always doing the small one. Because the small one, even though it's small, it's whole, and that has a certain chashivos of its own, and plus the fact that it lasts longer. Okay. The Gemara gives that answer to say, well, in other words, it means that not necessarily is a machlokas about onions the same as the machlokas of the Amoroim over here about bread. Okay. Of Nachman, Yorei Shemayim Yotzei De Shneihen, or Yorei Shemayim is Yotzei both of them. And the Gemara says of Rav Huna and Rav Yechanan. So Rashi learns that we're referring back to that machlokas of Rav Huna and Rav Yechanan about the whole versus the cutout when they're the same species. Tosfos says maybe not. Actually, Rav Nachman might be referring specifically to the case where we had a whole loaf of barley bread and a slice of wheat bread. So when they're all the same species, then the halacha might just be straight out like a bechanan, and you don't have to be choshesh for Rav Huna's opinion at all. You just make a bracha on the whole one. But when they're different species, then Tosfos says that's what the Gemara means. You yotze both of them. Again, Rashi says we're referring to both cases. So Umanu, when the Gemara says who is that? Who is Rav Nachman Yitzchok referring to by that Yorei Shemayim? Specifically, Ma'abre de Ravina. Specifically, Ma'abre de Ravina had a way of being yotze both. The Ma'abre de Ravina maniach prusa b'sarich ha'shleima uvetzea. He would place the slice into the whole one, and then he would cut them together. So into means because their bread in those days was often like pitas or tortillas or whatever. So you could literally put one inside the other. When you don't have that kind of bread, like we have nowadays, we don't usually have that kind of bread. Then it just means you put one of them, then you put one of them under the other one. So in this case, the Rashi explains that what you do is this way you're holding both of them, and then you cut either both of them if you want, or you cut just the whole one if you want.
On Shabbos, how do you...
Shabbos, you have Lachem Mishnah, and we're going to talk about soon what we do on Shabbos. We'll have that soon, so hold that book. So again, according to Rashi, what it means is you cut the whole one, and this way it looks like because the other one is underneath it or inside it or whatever, it looks like you also cut the slice, and people aren't going to realize that. Fine. Tony, so that way you yotze both. Tony Tana Kameder Rav Yitzchok, and Tana taught similarly in front of Rav Yitzchok. Maniach Aprusa B'Seicha Shleima Uvetzeya Umavarech. You put the slice one into the whole one or underneath the whole one, and then you cut them and you make the bracha. Amalei Mashim Chaser Nachmei Yitzchok asked the Tana, "What's your name?" Amalei Shalman says, "My name is Shalman." Or Gilui Nashaf says the name might be Salmon, like we find Salmon. Well, not Salmon. No, that comes later. But it might be Salmon, like we find at the end of Megillah Suros, is one of the ancestors of David HaMelech. Amalei, so Nachmei Yitzchok says that's a very appropriate name for you. Shalom Ata Ushleima Mishnasa. You represent Shalom in your very name, and your Mishnah is whole. Your Mishnah is very correct. Shasamta Shalom ben Talmidim, because you made Shalom between the Talmidim. That this way we have a way to be yotze both ways, both the whole by putting one inside the other. Right. Now we learned yesterday we had the criticism of the Amora who said Motzi lechem min ha'aretz, because what are you picking? Because what are you doing? Why don't you say Hamotzi? And we would have learned that the halacha is like one versus the other. But over here it's different because you can accomplish both. Over there it's either you're saying Motzi or you're saying Hamotzi. There's no middle ground. Whereas over here there is a middle ground. Okay. Now everybody does agree when it comes to Pesach, Shemaniach Prusa B'Seich Shleima Ovetzea. Then definitely on Pesach, you put the sliced one into or underneath the whole one, and then you cut it. My time of Lechem Oni Ksiv, because on Pesach you have to have Lechem Oni, and a poor person often can't even afford a whole loaf of bread. So on Pesach you have to have a half a loaf, so therefore it has to look more, the rest of the year you want it to look more like you're cutting the whole loaf, because that has more of a chashivus. But on Pesach, you want it to be apparent that you're cutting the half a loaf. So Tosfos gets into...
So then you should put the half a loaf Tosfos gets into a
bit of discussion about the various possibilities. Tosfos says that actually, no, what the Gemara means is you should be cutting both. The fact of the matter is you do have a whole matzah there as well, because you do need lachem mishnah, and Pesach is a yom tov after all. Mind you, by the way, you have Rishonim, the Rambam among others, who say that unlike the rest of the year, Shabbat and yom tov, where you actually need two whole loaves, on Pesach you only need one and a half because of lachem oinim. And according to them, you would only have two matzahs under the Seder plate. According to everybody else, and this is of course how we do it nowadays, is you have three matzahs, so this way you have two whole ones for Lechem Mishnah and a half of one for Lechem Oni. Anyway, Tosfos gets into a discussion over here about the possibilities and the permutations. The halacha, as we have it nowadays, is that you say Hamotzi holding all three of them. That way you're holding Lechem Mishnah as well as you're holding the cut one. Then you let go of the bottom one. You say Alachilas Masa only on the top one and the middle one. That way you're making the bracha on the Shlema and on the Purusa together.
The Purusa is still underneath.
It's still underneath, fine. But as they said before, you put the Purusa underneath the Shlema. But then what you do is you break off from the Shlema and the Purusa, and you eat that to the Kedayas of Masa. So again, Tosfos discusses a few other possibilities and a few other things that different Balei HaTosfos did, but this is how we do it nowadays. Okay.
So for Amotzi,
you take all three of them,
together.
So the two and a half together. For Alach Chilas Matzah, you hold only the top and the middle one. Then you break off from the top and the middle one and eat them together. Okay. Interesting thing also, Tosfos mentions at the end of it here that the Re would say Hamotzi and then start breaking the matzah a little bit and not separate it completely until he said Alachilas Matzah, which seems to imply that they had Sfok Matzah at that time, because Horon Matzah, there's no way of partially breaking it.
Okay. Well, you could, I mean...
It's not very... Okay. Amr of Abba, over Shabbos, Chai Vodim of Soyal Shtei Kippur. So Abba says, on the other hand, on Shabbos, a person has to make a bracha on two loaves of bread. My time, a lechem mishnah. So it's not just enough to have one loaf.
You have to cut two.
To cut means you have to cut on two kikris. Means you have to make the bracha and then cut on two kikris. My time, a lechem mishnah. Because it says lechem mishnah, so you have to have a double. You have to have a double portion. Hold on. Amr Rav Ashi, chazina leila Rav Kahana, the nukat tauti ubasa chada. Rav Ashi says, I saw Rav Kahana, who was his rebbe. He would hold both loaves of bread on Shabbos and then he would cut one of them. So we don't mean you have to cut both of them. We mean that you have to have two loaves of bread in front of you to make the bracha. But you only cut one of them. Actually, it discusses in Shulchan Aruch which one should you be cutting, the top one or the bottom one. So actually, in Shulchan Aruch it says that you should cut the top one. But then it says that there are people who al pi Kabbalah say that you should cut the bottom one, and therefore what we do is you make sure the bottom one is a little closer to you, so that way you don't have a problem with Mavir and Amos. One second. So that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Our minhag is actually that what we do is we don't put them one on top of the other. Friday night we put them next to each other, and Shabbos day we put one a little bit on top of the other. There's actually at the end of Torah or last week's Parashas B'Shalach, the author never discusses why to have the two of them next to each other, why in some cases you should have one on top of the other, because there's two different ways of amshachas of course into the world basically.
One is
where everything is on the same level, which is more related to Sogar Kalaman, that everything is on the same level relative to Elikos. The other one is more related to Mamale, where one of them is higher than the other. Rav Zera have a bossa akula shirusa. Rav Zera, when he would cut the bread for Hamotzi on Shabbos, he would cut a large enough piece that he could be eating throughout the meal. Or you have some of the Rishonim learn that what it means is that unlike Rav Kahana, he would cut both challahs. That way he has enough bread in front of him for the entire meal. Omelet Ravina la Ravashi, so Ravina says to Ravashi, how could Rav Zera do that? Doesn't that look like being a glutton? He's cutting such a large piece to put in front of him. Omelet, so he says, no. Since Rav Zera didn't do that the rest of the week, he's only doing it now on Shabbos, so it doesn't look like gluttony. It looks like covered Shabbos that he's cutting himself, he's showing that I have enough, to be able to eat comfortably. Another din in connection with Hamotzi, Rav Ami
v'Rav Ami.
So that's what we do. We cut it. So we don't necessarily have to cut both. In practice, people usually only cut one. But there is this inyan about cutting a large enough piece to last you throughout the whole meal. Rav Ami v'Rav Ami, ki havim srami lehu rista de'eruva. Rav Ami and Rav Ami, if they had a chance, if they got a hold of bread that was used for an eruv, eruv chaseiros, for example, or eruv tumen, as the case may be, Rashi says eruv chaseiros. Later on, they would take the opportunity to make hamotzi on it. Amri, and they said, since one mitzvah was done with it, never been mitzvah achriti, we should use it for another mitzvah as well. This is the source for the concept that we have. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch that when you make an Erev Tavshilin, when Yom Tov is on Friday, then you use the challah from the Erev Tavshilin as one of your challahs on Shabbos. And then Shalosh Shudas, I think, or the second meal, as the case may be, in that way, the same idea. You use it for one mitzvah, now you have the opportunity to use it for another mitzvah.
It's not a halacha, though.
Well, it's not absolutely required, but the actual requirement as far as Erev Tavshilin is the Erev has to be intact until you finish your preparations for Shabbos. If the Erev gets eaten before that, then you have a problem. You can't continue preparing for Shabbos. As far as Erev Chatzeres, the bread still has to be intact for you to be able to carry in the Chatzer on Shabbos. So therefore, here where Rashi is saying was that bread from Erev Chatzeres, so one possibility is the Gemara doesn't mean they ate it on Shabbos, it means they would eat it on Sunday. And but they would be saying Hamotzi on it and then eating it on Sunday. And the other possibility is that maybe they held according to the opinions that say that even if the Erev Chatzeres was eaten after Shabbos begun, then once Shabbos began with the Erev intact, then you're okay.
So Erev
Tavshilin,
when do you eat it?
So that's the thing. So Erev Tavshilin, the minhag is, therefore, that you... Not the first meal Friday night, but rather the second meal Shabbos day. Shabbos day is when you eat the challah from the Erev Chatzeres. And then the egg from the Erev Chatzeres, not Erev Chatzeres, Erev Tavshilin. And the egg you eat whenever you want, I guess. Yeah.